The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of The Undercurrent. Yes, it's true, and yes, I know we've been off for a little bit. Maybe we just needed a little bit of breathing room after the Sharks season, but we do have a few more episodes for you before we press reset in the fall. I hope you're all enjoying nice weather wherever you are, and I hope you're enjoying some really interesting storylines in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I know I have been. So to round out the season on the show here, we're going to focus on some compelling people within the Sharks organization, including a few prospects over the coming weeks. But today, as we head towards the NHL draft in just under a month, a key cog in the Sharks, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Rebuild? No, retool, formation. As the supervisor of European scouting, Shin Larson plays an important role in making sure the Sharks have a solid prospect pool. His job is super interesting, to be sure, but so is his own journey, as you'll hear, as a young kid who wanted to play in the NHL to a star for Team Japan at the 1998 Olympics in Nagano. I caught up with Shin at his home in Sweden. Shin, it is nice to see you. It's what time in Sweden for you?
It's 7 p.m. right now.
Okay, well, I thank you for taking the time during what I expect is a pretty busy period for you. Am I correct in thinking that? The Stanley Cup final is set, the draft combine is next week, and then the NHL draft basically just a month from now. So are you busy right now?
Yes, it's it is pretty busy. Actually, the last live game watched is done with now, with the World Championships being over and the Under-18 World Championships also over with. So now it's mostly preparing for the draft with making all the lists and looking through the players again and getting ready for the draft.
I'm sure there's no such thing as a typical day because you're doing all kinds of things. And like you just mentioned, attending all kinds of games, all kinds of tournaments. But if you could kind of encapsulate for people who don't know what maybe the life of a scout looks like, how would you describe it?
Yeah, so during the season, it usually starts in August with a big tournament called the Ivan Linka Gretzky Tournament. It's an under 18 tournament that's every other year in Slovakia, Czech, or in Canada. Mm-hmm. So last year it started up in Canada, and that's kind of the kickoff for the full season. And then once you get into the middle of the season, a typical day would be. The night before I probably went to a game somewhere. So in the morning I wake up, we look at the highlights from different leagues, different players. And then I usually do my reports in the morning from the night before. And that usually takes a while. It takes maybe an hour or two, depending on how many players you did reports on. And then after lunch in the afternoon, you're pretty much getting ready for the next game. Probably driving somewhere, whether it's here in Leksand. I'm lucky to have a couple of teams here that I can watch in my hometown, but usually it's driving anything between 1 hour to 4 hours sometimes. And
wow.
Yeah, it's quite busy.
And so you're the supervisor now of European scouting for quite some time. So does that mean you have other scouts under your purview, as it were?
Yeah, I'm lucky to have five colleagues here in Europe now. We're spread out in Sweden, Finland, Czech, Slovakia. And we also have Nikolai Ladygin, who's Ukrainian, and he helps us with the Russian players and that part of the hockey world.
I read, I think it was an interview with Sheng Peng when you were talking about the way that scouting has changed. You used to be able to, maybe before the internet was so omnipresent, you could have a pocket of, like, you know, your secret spot or your secret player. And now there are no secrets. So, I mean, are there different tricks of the trade at this point?
No, I don't think so. I think it comes down to your organizational philosophies a lot. There's so many scouts these days. When I first started, I don't think there was quite as many, not over here in Europe anyways. But now I think every team has at least 3-4 scouts over here in Europe. So there's not a lot of secrets anymore. You know, like you often go to a lot of the same games with scouts from other clubs, and it just comes down to what your opinions are about the players and if they fit into your organization or not, I think.
So the NHL draft combine, there are a lot of, you know, cards held close to the chest in terms of teams and what they ask these prospects, and some of the, you know, but you hear rumors about, you know, drill sergeants being in the room sometimes, and psychologists, obviously. How much do you learn about a player when you sit him down during those interviews?
I think for me personally, it's always been just meeting them face to face usually. And I think you can tell a lot by that, what kind of, you know, person they are. And I think that's the biggest thing. And then obviously there's some questions always. Combines is a little hectic. It's only 10, 15 minutes with each player. So you don't have a lot of time really. A lot of these players we met throughout the year. So we did most of the groundwork then, and then it's just another opportunity to meet them, basically.
How much is decided by the time you get to the draft? I mean, you have your list. Does anything change last minute if somebody makes a surprise move?
No, I don't think so. Not a lot. It's mostly set. We have a lot of meetings leading up to the draft, and there are the odd timeouts during the draft, but it's not that often that it happens, I think.
So your journey specifically is really interesting. It's not necessarily a linear trajectory from the beginning to where you are now. So I want to talk about your life story, starting with your parents, because, you know, I mean, your parents' story in itself is really compelling. How did they meet?
Yes. So my mother is Japanese. My father is Swedish. I think it was my mother that was really intrigued by Sweden and was always reading about Sweden and interested in Sweden. So she came here close to 50 years ago and somehow ended up meeting my dad. And she has lived and stayed in Sweden ever since. So she's probably more Swedish than Japanese now, I would say.
What role did hockey play in your life as a young person? When did you discover it?
I started when I was 7 years old here in Leksand. It's a small town, but it's a real hockey town. Not a lot of other things to do. So most of my friends at least tried playing hockey, and so did I. And I fell in love with the sport. So ever since 7 years old, I've been involved in hockey in some way.
And who were your role models? Who did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah, I guess first the first 10 years or so living here in Leksand, it was the local hockey players. They play in the highest league here in Sweden. So it was a lot of they had a lot of good players on that team. And also in the summertime, you get a glimpse of those players that played in the NHL, like Alf Samuelsson, Pelle Eklund, Kjell Samuelsson. Those guys came home in the summer, and definitely guys I looked up to, and that kind of grew the NHL interest in me too.
Yeah. So what did you have your sights on? Would it have been the SHL or was it the NHL for you?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, it was definitely the local team, the SHL team, to make it up there. And the national team here in Sweden, you know, was always a dream, I think, growing up. But then as I got older and watched more of the NHL, I had some favorite Swedish players, like the players I mentioned before, and Mats Näslund, an old player that played for Montreal.
Oh, he was my favorite player growing up.
The
Viking. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. My family's from Montreal, so yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, great, great player. That's how I guess the NHL interest started. And of course, I dreamt about that. And I actually went over to Montreal to play one season with the Verdun. It was called the Le Collège Français at the time, for one season, and trying to chase that dream. But it didn't work out for me to make it to the NHL. But I still got a lot out of hockey, I think, in different parts of the world.
So all of a sudden in 1994, you're playing hockey and you get a call recruiting you to play in Japan because they wanted to grow the game at home before hosting the Nagano Olympics. Was that unexpected? Did you have any sense that they were kind of looking for players?
A little bit. I had been there a couple of years before that to play with their junior national team, actually in the, I think the early stages of this tournament, I was talking about the Link tournament. They used to have a tournament called the Pacific Cup. Mm-hmm. It was Canada, US, Russia, and they had under 18 teams, and then Japan had an under 20 team. So that was my first time going over there to play hockey. And then I heard that they were trying to push for the Nagano Olympics there and try to find some players like myself that maybe grew up in Sweden, or some of them grew up in Canada or the US. And we all got together there, 94, to play in the league, the local league, and with the national team. We had to be there for 4 years before the Olympics.
That's a big That's a big commitment.
Yes, it was, for sure.
Okay, well, describe your experience if you could. I mean, first of all, you're playing major junior, you're playing with the junior national team, then you go to Japan. What level at that time was the play at?
I was quite surprised early when I came over. I was still young. I was 20 years old, and it was a fully professional league. It was only six teams, but very professionally run. They were owned by companies, big Japanese companies that actually put quite some money into the hockey teams. There was two imports on each team, and then players like myself. So usually all the teams had five or six players that grew up overseas, and some really good Japanese players on top of that. So it's pretty good level, actually. I was surprised.
Hmm. So by the time you get to 1998, obviously you're, you know, at a high enough level, you make the national team, you play. What was the aspiration of that team? Because obviously, you know, you're coming in, there are powerhouses in Canada and the US and Sweden and other countries you've mentioned. What was the hope for the Japanese team?
Yes, we actually spent the whole year traveling around. We went to Canada, Europe, just to play as many quality games as we could leading up to the Olympics. And I remember we sat down before the Olympics and we said our objective and our goal is going to be to not finish last in the tournament, because then everybody going to say we were only there because we're the host country, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was basically our plan and our goal.
Okay, and you did not, thanks
no,
to...
No, we did not. We actually we managed to tie Belarus in the round robin there. And then in the final game, we played Austria for avoiding the last spot in the Olympics. And we managed to beat them in in the shootouts in that game. So it was an exciting time, and packed arena there in Nagano, and being able to win there for the fans in Japan, it was amazing feeling for the whole team, I think.
And of course, you say we because you're a hockey player, and that's what hockey people do. But you actually scored the overtime shootout winner, isn't that true?
Yeah, it's true. It's also true that I got two opportunities. I missed my first shot, and I got to thank the coaches. It was they gave me another opportunity to redeem myself, and it turned out to be the game winner. So happy about that.
Had you always felt very connected to your Japanese heritage?
Yes, I have, because we used to go there. I have a younger sister too, and we used to go there, if not every year, every other year in the summertime to visit relatives. And I think also my mother, she spoke Japanese to me and my sister in the house, and made some Japanese food for us and that. So I've always felt pretty close to the Japanese culture, I think.
So you kept on playing. Did you stay in Japan for a little bit after that?
I did. I stayed a total of 10 years, actually, in Japan. 8 years in Tokyo and 2 years up north.
How do you think the Olympics helped grow the game there?
I think at the time around the Olympics, it was quite a buzz around hockey. But honestly, I would have hoped that it could have grown some more out of it. I think it just shows that it's really hard in some parts of the world where the hockey culture isn't that big, and you don't have a lot of rinks or arenas, you know, for hockey. So it's difficult to grow the game, I think. But there was a buzz there for a few years around the Olympics.
And the women's team, I mean, shows up in international competition regularly too.
Yes. So yeah, it's always fun to watch in the Olympics or the World Championships when they play, and they are able to compete with the best of the women's teams there. So I think the women's side of hockey over there, they made big strides for sure.
So yeah. What led you to management? Is that something that you felt like you had an aptitude for, that you wanted to do with all of your hockey knowledge?
Not initially, I think. I think I was in the hockey bubble like all players are as long as I played. And I was honestly, I was pretty tired of the game when I retired. And I probably told myself a couple of times that enough is enough of hockey. But I think I stayed away for half a year or something, and then I was back in it. And another half a year after that, I got the opportunity to start scouting. I had some friends that already were in scouting, and I knew a little bit about it. So I'm very, very thankful for that. And I've enjoyed every minute of that part of the hockey world for sure.
You've been with the Sharks for, I know you started in the NHL with Atlanta, but you've been with the Sharks since 2008. That's a long haul. What drives you to remain and continue to see this organization through ups and downs?
Yeah, first of all, I can't believe it's been close to 15 years already. It's just blown by, honestly. And just working with so many great people from day one, Doug Wilson and Tim Burke, Joe Will, that took me in there 2008, working with them for such a long time. And the team was very successful those years too. And it just went by really quickly. And then unfortunately, the last 3-4 years, we've had a tougher time. But the way I look at it is I'm just thankful to be able to be part of it as we're trying to rebuild this thing again. And it's exciting for me. And I think the importance of our job is maybe even bigger now that we really need to find new players and become strong club again.
It's been a year with Greer, to cop a silly rhyme, but yep. You know, you've gone through one draft with him, and now another. What's he like to work with, and what would you say his qualities are as a GM?
Yes, I think obviously when he came in, it was under very difficult circumstances when our good friend Brian Marchmont passed away there, yeah. And I was really impressed the way he was able to handle everything last year at the draft. It couldn't have been easy for him with everything that was going on, and that says a lot about him, I think, what a class person he is. And over the year here, been able to spend some time with him and the rest of the group, and I really like it, enjoyed it, and I think there's a lot of new energy in the organization, mm-hmm. for sure.
I know everybody's really interested and curious to see what happens at the draft, and you know, how these puzzle pieces are going to start fitting together. Yeah. I'm wondering, for you, I mean, again, you're a hockey person, you probably don't like to take too much responsibility alone for anything, but do you have some feathers in your cap in terms of players that you identified early on that you now see excelling?
I think early on it was we were such a good team that were in the playoffs almost every year and competing for, you know, the cup year in and year out, and we weren't fortunate enough to have that many like early draft picks especially, and a lot of times we were pushing for it and maybe made some trades and traded away some picks too. And now that's different. I think we have a lot of picks this year, and we did last year too. So it's a different time now. But I don't know if I don't want to take any credit myself or any players. As an organization, I think we were good at finding players like Hurdle and. Obviously over there, they were very good at finding players late in the draft, like Pavelski and Justin Braun and those type of players. But I also think we did a great job with free agents for a lot of those years when we didn't have that many draft picks. We were able to find really good players from Europe and from North America that fit in with the a good club like we were. So that's something I've taken pride in for sure early on. And now we're going to find some good draft players.
That is the hope for sure. And I'm wondering, you know, this is such a ramp up now to the draft. Do you have some time to relax before things start up again?
Yes, I think so. It's nice when you're at home, you don't, you're forced to relax a little bit or take your mind off of hockey a little bit, because I have a family here with two young boys. They're 13 and 15, and they keep me busy. So it takes your mind off of your work for a little bit. And on Sunday, I'm leaving to go over for the combines again, and full preparation for the draft there.
Well, have fun in Buffalo. Have some wings, because you have to. That's the law.
Okay.
When you go to Buffalo, yeah. Enjoy the combine and the draft. And thanks for taking the time. I know this is a really busy period. So, and please say hi if you're in San Jose.
I will do. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Shin for taking the time to chat with me from his home in Sweden. And thank you for listening. And guess what? We will be back next week with another episode of The Undercurrent, I promise. In the meantime, enjoy some great hockey, I hope, and keep your fins above water, people. Talk to you soon.